freezing water still clinging to my skin. Shivering, I made my way down the frigid cadaver tunnel, clenching my teeth to keep them from chattering. I'd worn a skirt that day, thinking I'd beat the forecasted rain for the evening. It was my luck to have to walk in it anyway. There was no sign of Professor Bramwell when I entered the autopsy room and strode toward the hooks holding the lab coats. As I approached, I noticed something sticking up from the pocket of my lab coat. A note. I opened it to find a small plastic card with the Dragon's Lair coffee shop logo on it. The attached paper simply said,
"Now you can buy coffee whenever you like. B."
It was a yearly pass. One he must have purchased for himself, and at the echoes of my self-wallowing earlier, I winced. It wasn't like me at all to be so pathetically self-deprecating, but I was tired. Stressed, confused, angry, a whole host of emotions that made the perfect storm. Even then, I felt kind of stupid for dumping all of that on him. I unhooked my coat to find my purse hidden beneath it, and I nabbed it, just then remembering the dreaded walk I'd have to make back to my dorm, seeing as the last pickup of the night had already come and gone. I'd be a sopping mess, and with my luck would end up with a horrible pneumonia, proving my mother right all those years. A sound reached my ears, loud, pained, brimming with suffering. A chill skated up my spine, the hairs on the back of my neck standing on end. It arrived again, that time carrying a distinct masculine pitch that I recognized. Bramwell? He could have been having another attack. Without too much contemplation, I punched the keypad code and dashed through the door into the lab. I yanked my phone, ready to make a call in the event that his heart had suffered the attack that time. Eyes scanning the candlelit space, I caught sight of the glass dome, where Patroclus and Achilles fluttered around inside. Flying. Though my head begged to tease out the possibility of such a thing, it was only a brief distraction in my otherwise cursory search, and I kept on through the other set of doors toward Bramwell's office. I slowed my steps on hearing the sounds of quiet moaning and peeked into his office. He sat at the desk, turned toward his bookshelves, shirtless, his muscles glistening with sweat, a tourniquet wrapped just below his bulging bicep. I trailed my gaze to the tray of test tubes in front of him, the purple marbly tubes that I'd seen earlier under the hood. Beside them lay a syringe. Unless I was mistaken, those were the test tubes labeled Nyxver. The Noctosoma toxin, had he injected them into himself? Jarred with disbelief, I stood paralyzed, watching him writhe in his chair, grunting and moaning as I presumed the toxin worked its way through his body. My phone slipped out of my hands, clattering to the floor. Shit, shit. Slapping a hand to my mouth, I swiped it up and backed myself away. As I heard him moving about, undoubtedly getting up out of his chair, I turned to the nearest door beside me and ducked inside. Footsteps approached, and in a panic, I stumbled through the dark room until I felt a cold metal surface beneath my fingertips and slid my hand over a latch. With a yank, I swung it open and shut myself inside. Through the barrier, I heard the other door creak open. Footsteps. I bit my lip, praying he wouldn't find me there. Given how staunchly he protected his privacy, who knew how he'd react if he suspected I'd seen him? The footsteps retreated, and I exhaled a jittery breath. When I reached for the latch to open the door, though, it wouldn't budge. Oh, no. No, no, no. I wriggled the latch, yanking on it, but to no avail. A putrid stench assaulted my senses, so repulsive it sprang tears to my eyes, and I covered my nose with the back of my hand, swallowing back a gag. Blindly patting the wall, I found a light switch and flipped it on. A fluorescent tube flickered overhead, and I turned around to find that I had locked myself in what looked to be a smaller autopsy room, with only one examination table. A white sheet covered what I had little doubt was a body beneath. Muscles quaking, I tiptoed toward it, my heart rioting inside my chest with every step closer, and I peeled back the sheet. There on the table lay a man with the telling post-autopsy Y incision stitches, and whose eyeballs had been removed, leaving empty sockets. Another gag punched the back of my throat, the acids burning as I breathed hard through my nose. The sight of him sent an icy trickle of fear down my spine, and with a sharp exhale, I threw the sheet back over him to quickly cover him up. Even without his eyes, Something about him looked vaguely familiar, but I couldn't place why. And I didn't care, because the realization that I was stuck in there with him hit me right then. I ran for the door. No fucking way was I staying all night with a corpse who had no eyeballs. No fucking way. When the door wouldn't budge again, I pounded. The panic rose up into my throat and I let out a scream. Cold tentacles of fear slithered over the back of my neck. A glance over my shoulder revealed a ghostly figure of the man standing alongside the examination table. Forehead pressed to the door, I squeezed my eyes shut. No, no, no. Hysterics commandeered me, and I slammed the heel of my hand against the door. A sob broke from my chest. Help me! Somebody help me! The door swung open, and I dove headfirst into the body standing in the doorway. I wrapped my arms around it, fingers clawing into flesh to keep me rooted there, away from that room and the death it held. Every muscle in my body convulsed in terror, and I let out a shaky breath, the tears spilling down my cheeks. At first he didn't move, but then strong arms engulfed me, pulling me closer.
Oh, fuck, Lilia. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I clung to him, letting the fear work its way through me. The realization that I could have been stuck all night in there gnawed at my bones every time I dared to imagine the visual. It was when I felt the gentle stroke down my damp hair that I glanced up to see Professor Bramwell embracing me, his eyes brimming with remorse. Remorse that shifted to confusion as he stroked my hair slower. Curiosity and trepidation clashed his eyes, and he skated his palm down my cheek, pausing to rub his fingers together. His thumb caressed my bottom lip, and his hand moved to my hair again, where he let a strand slip through his fingers, eyes alight with fascination.
I feel you.
I stared up at him, the fear inside of me dissolving, and I raised my hand. He placed his much bigger hand against mine, palm to palm, and curled his fingers around mine, swallowing then.
I feel everything.
He let out a choke of a laugh.
I fucking feel everything.
He whisked me into his arms and spun me around. My stomach flipped, and a giggle slipped free in spite of my earlier tears. The room settled as he placed me back onto my feet and held me against him, tightly. I didn't move. Like the night before, I let him hang on to me, breathing.
You're so cold,
he said, the heat practically radiating from him as I sagged into his embrace. It was raining hard, and my words drifted off the moment his fingers feathered across my back into my arms where they drew a light caress. He let out a shaky exhale as he ran them up my shoulders and to my throat, where he held my face in his palms. The delicious spice and musk of his cologne mingled with the cinnamon on his breath, the intoxicating mix watering my mouth. His gaze fell to my lips, and I wondered if he'd kiss me. The restive beat of my heart marked each passing second as I waited for it. With a shake of his head, he stepped back.
Forgive me. You're the first thing I've felt in a long time.
As he drew his hands back, I reached out to clutch his forearms, holding them there. What was the last thing you remember feeling? Pain flashed over his face.
My brother's hand. Just before he was taken away and killed.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. Brows tight, he ran his fingertips across my clavicle and licked his lips.
You feel good.
My nerves caught in my throat as I said, you do, too. Curious eyes seemed riveted on my lips, and he ran his thumb over their surface. Before I could gauge his next move, he leaned forward and pressed his lips to mine. All sound faded. The world around us disappeared. The kiss began slow, a mere sampling, as he brushed his lips over mine. He grabbed either side of my face, pulling me closer, fully committing to the kiss and a tingling deluge of excitement scattered across my skin. Some kisses were said to feel like fireworks. His felt like a slow drip anesthetic, silently siphoning my senses, until all I could smell, taste, and feel was him. I held his biceps as he ate the breath from my mouth and ran his palms over my exposed skin. He pulled me closer still, kissing me with such passionate fervor that my knees weakened. I'd never been kissed by a man. Boys, yes, but never a man. Not even Ghost Boy, who was technically an adult, held a candle to Professor Bramwell's skill and mastery. The way he teased with his tongue and held me as if I were fragile porcelain. It was right then that I realized I'd never truly been kissed before at all. As his grip hardened, the need for oxygen burned my lungs, punching at my ribs. I tugged my head back, but he held fast, threading his fingers through my hair, jaw flexing as he dipped his tongue to deepen the kiss. Dizziness settled over me, the need to breathe setting off alarms inside my head. I whimpered against his lips and pressed my palms to his chest. When he pulled away on a sharp inhale, a coldness filled the space between us, and the dizziness heightened, claiming my balance. I teetered to the side, and he caught me, holding me upright. Forehead pressed to mine, he breathed hard.
I'm sorry. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking.
It's okay.
No. No, it's not okay.
He released me and stepped back.
I can't fuck this up. Not now.
Don't take that personally, my head warned. Running a hand over his brow, he turned away from me.
Forgive me. I'm just overwhelmed right now. I didn't mean...
It's okay. I understand. It was a pretty tense moment for both of us. His gaze flicked toward the autopsy room behind me and back.
You'll not speak a word of what you saw in there.
Of course not. But you injected yourself with the toxin, I countered. When he didn't respond, only stared at me with that chilling, sobering look in his eyes, I kept on. I remembered seeing the vials under the hood. You're performing clinical trials on yourself, aren't you? He slowly turned back around to face me.
You're in a very precarious situation, Miss Vespertine.
Spencer's words echoed inside my head, those warning me that Professor Bramwell was a bad man. Are you infected with the worms?
No, of course not. The toxin is purified.
So you can't become sick from it?
Not at all.
Swallowing hard, I lowered my gaze. I won't tell anyone.
How can I trust you? How do I know you won't use it against me?
I reached for his hand and linked my fingers in his, keeping my eyes on him. I give you my word. With a gruffness, he shook off the connection.
Come on,
he said in a surly voice.
I'll walk you back to your dorm.
My dorm? Won't someone see us?
There's a path through the woods.
It's pouring rain, I argued back, because I didn't want to be alone and I didn't want to leave him alone. What if he fell into a seizure again and there was no one there? Maybe I should stay a bit. What if you have a bad reaction? Not a single cell in my body imagined that he'd actually consider such a thing. And the argument to stay sat perched on the tip of my tongue, ready to fire off when he gave a short nod.
Fine.
As Bramwell furiously scribbled notes into a journal, I sat sprawled on the couch in my long socks, reading a chapter from my textbook on my phone for the next day's lecture. Soft piano music drifted from the record player, the cozy ambiance colliding with the feverish thrill still humming through my bones. My lips tingled where he'd kissed me earlier, and as subtle as I could muster, I ran a thumb over them, wishing I could capture the feel of his mouth on mine again. Focus, Lilia. I turned my mind back to my reading, then yawned and stretched, settling further into the cushions, willing my eyes to stay open. Between the laboriously detailed text and the lingering echoes of that kiss, the maelstrom of thoughts in my head exhausted me.
If you're tired, the couch folds out to a bed. You can sleep there.
Sleep there? I'd only expected to stay a couple hours to observe him. I never imagined he'd invite me to stay overnight, and I didn't dare question it aloud. What about you?
I'll sleep here in my chair.
He planned to stay too, the two of us sleeping in the same room.
It's raining pretty hard.
He'd gone to lock up the incinerator entrance about 15 minutes earlier and must have noticed it then. We were reined in together, alone in the dungeon of the building, and I was going to be sleeping over with Professor Bramwell, Dr. Death. Perhaps that should have terrified me, especially since there was an eyeless corpse laid out in the room across the hall. Unfortunately, it didn't. As naive as it might have made me, I felt something with Bramwell that no other man in my life, including Connor, had ever made me feel. Safe. I let that thought wrap itself around me like a blanket as I stared back at him, then snapped my focus back to the issue at hand. No need to be a martyr. You can sleep on the bed. I'll just make a bed out of the couch cushions.
I'll use the cushions.
Don't be ridiculous. You're twice my size.
Have you always been so damn stubborn?
Since the womb, I'm afraid. I was born 9 days after my due date. He grumbled and scribbled more notes. The man looked absolutely delicious in his half-buttoned black shirt that he'd since donned and the thin-rimmed glasses he wore as he read through books. In the thick of his note-taking, he paused and ran his fingers over the shiny desk surface, then held his hand over the candle and quickly withdrew, rubbing his skin where it must have burned. I smiled, watching him explore all the different sensations around him. How exquisitely rich his world must have seemed now that he could feel again. So what happens next, now that you've had a successful variant?
I wait and see how it affects the moths. If they continue to respond favorably, we move to the next step.
I thought moths didn't have a nervous system like us. How do you measure success in them?
So long as Patroclus and Achilles continue to fly, the toxin is working.
You're going to be famous, Professor Bramwell. Burying a smile into my phone, I mindlessly read the same line in my book that I'd read 10 times already. In all the textbooks for having cured Vonerick's disease, arthritis, diabetes.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
It's called manifestation, and it actually works.
Yeah? What have you manifested?
I quirked a brow. Working in your lab. He groaned again in disapproval.
Blackmail is hardly manifestation.
The mechanisms for achieving your goals are inconsequential, so long as they're successful. I sucked my bottom lip between my teeth, marveling at the man's unbreakable focus on his work. Perhaps I manifested that kiss. He froze, staring down at his notes, then slowly removed his glasses.
Now, why would you do that?
I lowered my gaze to my fidgeting hands and shrugged. Are you angry?
I'm angry at myself, not you.
Why?
Because you're my student. I'm your professor. I also happen to be a decade older than you. You've got a lot to lose if someone found out. We both do.
Who would find out? There's no one here. He ran his tongue over his lips, his eyes lost to whatever thoughts churned inside his overthinking mind. With a shake of his head, he snapped out of it.
I can't do that, Lilia. This lab is still subject to the occasional visitor, the school provost in particular.
I like it when you say my name. Not something I would have ordinarily confessed so boldly, but the kiss reminded me that I wasn't alone in my attraction. A heavy silence filled the space between us as we stared back at one another, the intensity only broken when I cleared my throat and stood up from the couch. So I can start pulling these cushions off, then, to make my bed?
Yes.
He pushed up from his chair and helped me remove the stiff leather cushions, arranging them in a row to form a bed.
You're not sleeping here. You can sleep on the mattress,
he said, folding out the bed. Be serious. Look. I pointed to the row of cushions, which must have only measured about 4 feet in length. You've got to be over 6 feet tall. It'll be like sleeping on a dollhouse bed for you.
6'2", and I'll be fine.
From the closet, he pulled down a stack of sheets and unfolded them onto the mattress. He returned to the closet for 4 pillows, handing off 2 to me. Before he could stop me, I plopped down onto the cushions. Look, you see, it suits me better.
Up on the bed.
Don't be ridiculous, I'll be fine.
On the bed. Now.
The deadly authority in his voice prodded something deep inside of me. Something that begged to be cracked open and cut loose. A flash of fantasy slipped through my mind of him holding my throat, spouting off commands in that voice. You'll have to haul my dead, rotting corpse there.
I'm quite familiar with the task.
Lips tight, he bent forward and, to my utter shock, slid his hands beneath me, lifting me up into his arms. I let out an unattractive squawk as he threw me into the air, my skirt flying up around the spandex shorts I'd worn underneath, and the soft, cushy mattress caught my fall. Talk about stubborn. He strode over to the fireplace and lit a small flame, stoking it enough that it caught quickly and let off a blaze of radiant heat. As if mesmerized, he stared back at it and raised his hands, twisting them in front of him.
I never thought I'd feel warmth again. Not like this.
In his profile, I caught the slightest curve of his lips.
My brother used to tease that I was half dead for how cold my hands were all the time.
You said your brother was taken away and killed? The look he cast over his shoulder held an expression of, oh yeah, about that. He turned back to face the fire, and I pulled the blanket he'd set out up over myself.
He was kidnapped when we were about 17 years old. Boarding school. They sent what we believed were his ashes. For years I questioned whether or not they were his, but even if they weren't, the message was clear. He was gone.
A cold dread stirred in my stomach as an image of Bee's terrified face flashed through my mind. I quickly blinked it away. I'm so sorry.
I blamed myself for what happened to him.
Why? I stared off, wondering if his guilt weighed as heavily as mine, if it ever pressed down on him, drowning him as it often did me. His brows knitted together, and he lowered his hands.
The day was taken. I fell into one of my episodes. I couldn't fight back.
You were a kid. It wasn't your fault. He shook his head as if refusing to believe me, then pushed to his feet and strode over to his desk. From one of the drawers there, he withdrew a picture that he handed to me. I stared down at two adorable boys with dark hair and copper eyes, one with a more prominent dimple on the left, the other more prominent on the right. You're identical, I said, running my finger over the one I knew was Professor Bramwell, based only on his dimple.
He was 3 minutes older.
After examining the two of them side by side, I handed it back. I couldn't imagine losing my sister. She's going to be 17 this year. I worry what that'll mean for her.
And what do you mean?
She's in a sort of boarding school herself now. A special school designed to help her. She kind of had it rough when my mom died and, well, she's just been lost. Has some mental turmoil to work through. She, found my mother in the bathtub. My nerves hummed as they usually did with the creeping visual of what I'd actually seen that night. Except that time, I felt sliced open, like he could see the ugliness of it all, the dysfunction that had felt like a shadow for so many years. Anyway, the school has been great for her, but it's so expensive to keep her there. He looked thoughtful for a moment.
Your mother's trust pays for her tuition?
Trust? I wanted to laugh at that, but it occurred to me right then how disconnected the two of us were. How inconceivable it must have been for a man like him to imagine a woman living so irresponsibly as to not leave a trust behind for her child. My world must have been as foreign to him as his was to me. My mom didn't have anything when she died. Her boyfriend, Connor, is Bee's father. The two of us split tuition.
You pay for your sister's tuition while going to school?
Yeah. I didn't want to admit that I was a couple of months behind. It's why I was so hardball about getting paid in cash. I don't want to be that way, but sometimes you do things out of desperation, you know? I tried not to wince at the thought of the video I'd filmed in his class weeks ago. Or maybe you don't.
Don't ever feel ashamed of being ruthless in the pursuit of what you want, Lilia. The path to success is rarely a virtuous one.
After returning the picture to its drawer, he fell back into his chair.
And how is this, Connor?
I shrugged. He's okay. He sticks around, so I guess I can't complain. Has some pretty shitty friends, though.
They give you a hard time?
I bit my cheek to keep the repulsion from showing on my face as Angelo came to mind. One, he's the only one who really scares me.
And what's his name?
An edge of hostility hardened his voice, and I looked up to see rigid lines of malice darkening his expression, as though it angered him to know the man scared me. It doesn't matter. Shameful as it might have been to say, I liked his defensive reaction. I'd never relied on a man to protect me, ever. But something primal played on the back of my thoughts that went hand in hand with the visual of him choking me, and I found myself oddly turned on by it. Anyway, I know what you mean about feeling the guilt, though. I was 16 when my mom died. I knew things were going downhill with her, and I tried to get her to go to the hospital, but she refused. She was so paranoid of everything and everyone, and...
It wasn't your fault.
Those words hooked themselves in my belly and pulled a blackness from my guts that twisted and writhed. My head begged to ignore it, to cast him off as a liar. I turned away, forcing a smile. You're throwing my words back at me.
They're fairly wise words.
He reached down into his desk and brought up a decanter of amber-colored liquid. I watched him pour a dose into a glass and take a sip, mesmerized by the sheen that I wanted to lick off his lips. Every small gesture, from the lazy swirl of his drink, the way he inhaled the scent, to the gentle press of the glass against his lips, held a provocative undertone. Can I have some?
How far away is 21 for you?
Only a few weeks. He cocked a brow and reached down into the desk for another glass, pouring half as much.
Seeing as I don't know how you hold your liquor, we'll start with this.
He handed it off to me, his finger brushing mine when I accepted the drink. I swirled it just as he had, taking in the woodsy, fruity scent with a subtle hint of what reminded me of caramel. One small sip and I closed my eyes, letting the liquor sit on my tongue a moment where it burned before I swallowed it back. That's good. I liked the feel of it sliding down my throat into my belly, warm and tingly. When I opened my eyes, he was staring at me over the rim of his glass. I've never had this before. He tipped back his drink, polishing off about half the amount I had left in one sip.
That's good shit.
Can I ask you a question? The moment he winced, I chuckled and cleared my throat. Who's the guy in the autopsy room? He looks familiar.
You recognized him without eyeballs?
Not looking my way, he snorted.
Just someone I was asked to examine.
I thought I was going to be stuck in there all night with him. I was terrified, and then you came in and... I buried the visual of his kiss in another sip of my drink, remembering the taste of his lips on mine. I was so relieved to see you. His lips twitched as if to smile, and his gaze fell as he seemed to slip into thought.
The dead themselves are harmless. It's what they leave behind that inspires fear.
He blinked out of his staring and poured himself another glass of liquor.
I need to finish my notes. You might consider going to bed, Miss Vespertine. It's going on midnight.
I wish I would have packed a toothbrush. Whiskey will kill any bacteria in my mouth, though, won't it?
I wouldn't rely on that as a regimen, but I suspect you'll survive tonight.
I placed my glass down on a coaster atop the side table next to the couch, where I'd set my phone earlier. Beneath the blankets, I unlatched my skirt and shimmied out of it, leaving me in the shirt I'd paired it with and my spandex shorts. As I discarded it on the floor beside me, I noticed him staring at the garment, perhaps thinking I wore nothing beneath. I wondered if I should have said something about the shorts, that I shifted around a lot when I slept, which made my clothes shift, so they tended to drive me nuts. I figured I'd better just leave it alone, particularly when his attention veered back to his notes. Except there was the one issue. I don't suppose you have anything to secure one of my arms? I don't want to wander off into the corpse room half asleep. I'd probably have a heart attack. From another drawer of his desk, he pulled out a set of cuffs, presumably the ones he'd used to secure me in that cell. He strode over to the bed and snapped one to the metal frame, the other to my wrist. When he failed to release my arm, I looked up to see him staring down at it.
Memento mori,
he read aloud, running his thumb over my tattoo, his soft caress stirring an irrepressible fire beneath my skin.
Remember, you must die.
It's just something I did after my mother passed.
A reminder to appreciate life as a gift.
Smiling, I lowered my gaze. Some days are easier than others.
Having purpose helps. Keeps you from doing foolish things, like dropping out of school.
I winced at that. Earlier, when I said that stuff, I was just angry. I didn't mean to badmouth Professor Gilchrist. You won't tell her I said those things, will you?
No. I won't say a word about it. So long as you promise not to leave Dracadia.
I gave a playful smile. And abandon the opportunity to annoy the hell out of you? Never.
Good.
He held up the key to the cuffs and placed it on the side table next to my glass. If I thought about it, perhaps it was strange asking my professor to cuff me, but it spoke to the level of trust I felt around him. I probably could have slept naked and he wouldn't have laid so much as a finger on me. The man was rigid to a fault in that respect. No other male in my life had ever instilled such confidence in them, not even Connor, though I'd have never tested the theory. I settled into the bed, covers up to my neck, and watched him ease back into his chair. After giving one more glance toward my skirt on the floor, he returned to scribbling his notes, stopping every now and then to glance over at me, and the moment our eyes met, he went back to his writing. Much as I wanted to keep talking to him, to learn more about this enigmatic man, I didn't want to bother him while he worked. In the quiet, Sleep weighed heavy on me, heavier, until at last I could no longer keep my eyes open. Chapter 46. Lilia. A sound startled me upright. I looked around the dark space with a vague awareness that a fire crackled in my periphery. The door ahead stood cracked open. An unseen force compelled me to go to it. I didn't know what or why, but as I pushed up from the bed, a tug at my arm sent me backward. I trailed my gaze down the length of my arm to find something silver flashing at my wrist, but my mind didn't register what it was. Instead, I tugged and tugged.
Lilia.
I heard a voice whisper, and I turned toward the door once again, stared, waiting. The darkness shifted for a form that stepped into the light. A man with a grotesque curve of his spine, the one I'd seen earlier on the examination table. The eyeless man whose deep, dark sockets held a world of terror.
Come, sleep with us,
he whispered.
At the bottom of the lake.
He hobbled closer. I tugged at my wrist. No!
It's time, Lilia. Your mother is waiting for you at the bottom of the lake.
No! I pulled harder, and a sharp pain struck my wrist, but I didn't care. I needed to get loose, now. He inched closer and closer until he was standing over me.
Lilia.
He gripped my shoulders, and I let out a blood-curdling scream.
Lilia.
A light flicked on. Something shook me, hard. I opened my eyes to find Professor Bramwell standing over me, his hands gripping my shoulders. I snapped my attention toward the door, and finding it closed, choked on the air that arrived too fast. Just a nightmare. It was only a nightmare. My whole body trembled, though, the deep vibration rattling my bones. I didn't realize he'd asked me a question until he said,
Lilia.
Tipping his head to the side. What?
Are you all right?
I cleared my throat, shifting my attention back toward the door to make sure it remained closed and that the corpse was gone. Yes, I had a bad dream.
You damn near woke the dead with that scream.
From the side table, he swiped up the key for the handcuffs and unlocked them, setting my hand free. I released a nervous breath, still shaken. I'd had visions of the dead before, but something about that guy I'd seen earlier in the autopsy room freaked me out. Probably his lack of eyes. The sight of empty eye sockets made my skin crawl. Yeah. As Bramwell turned away, a restless fear spiraled through me again, and I reached out, grabbing his arm. Wait, can you stay with me? Here? Just for a couple minutes until I fall asleep again? He lowered his gaze to where I'd grabbed him, staring down at it for a moment. It was then I noticed he had on nothing but a pair of boxer briefs that contained an exceptionally well-endowed package beneath.
Yes,
he said, and I couldn't help taking in the whole of his physique. It wasn't even necessarily ogling the man, but appreciating the utter perfection of his form, his broad, muscled shoulders that tapered down to a slim waist, and that chiseled V disappearing into his briefs. Not overly bulky, he had just enough muscle to make a girl stare without wondering how many hours he spent at the gym. Gaze trailing over his body brought me staring at the mutilation scattered over his arm and shoulder and a strange black marking just below his collarbone. Not a tattoo. Something deeper that seared the skin and created a horrific groove in his flesh. A branding of what looked to be two crossed medical staffs and a seven contained in a circle. I nodded toward it. What is that? His lips flattened.
A mistake I made early on in my college career.
Like a fraternity thing?
Something like that.
I scooted over to make room, and he rounded the bed to the other side and sank onto the mattress beside me, careful to keep some distance between us. Once settled, He threw the sheet over his lower half, relieving me of that hard-to-miss bulge and those muscled legs of his. Did he always sleep in his briefs? Or nude? Perhaps he was just being decent around me. Or maybe he slept in more clothes. The fireplace had warmed the room with a sticky heat, and he had slept closest to it, so perhaps it was a matter of comfort for him.
I would think it's dangerous to cuff yourself to the bed every night,
he said, interrupting my thoughts. I don't typically use handcuffs, and usually I can snap myself out of it quickly. I don't know why I couldn't this time.
You suffer night terrors.
At a flash of the eyeless man hobbling toward me, I winced. Yes. They're horrible.
Paralysis.
Sometimes, yes.
I did too, as a boy. Of course it didn't take closing my eyes to throw me into nightmares with the father I had.
And just like that, the first chip into his past and the mystery of his father. He was abusive?
Forgive me, I shouldn't have brought that up. I don't care to talk about him right now.
Damn it. With a huff, he eased down onto the bed, jostling the mattress, and faced away. Disappointed, I turned over and flicked off the light. Chapter 47. Lilia.
Lilia.
The sound of my name drove me out of the black void of sleep, and my muscles jerked. On instinct, I prodded the pillow in search of my knife and opened my eyes in a haze of confusion when I didn't immediately recognize my surroundings. The sound of moaning and movement had me turning over to see that Professor Bramwell had fallen asleep next to me. Writhing on the bed, he seemed caught up in a dream, and when he lifted his arms over his head, tucking them beneath his pillow, the sight of him sent a throbbing ache between my thighs. Jesus. The man looked hot even when he slept. Meanwhile, I probably looked like a drooling Saint Bernard. Had he been the one to say my name? Or was it an echo of my own dream?
Yeah,
he whispered, still shifting on the bed.
That's it.
The slight slur of his words told me he was still deep in sleep.
Touch me, Lilia.
I froze, heated tingles scattered over the back of my neck. He was dreaming of me? He turned his head away, and his stomach twitched, his hips grinding out a sensuous wave of unconscious pleasure.
Just like that.
My thighs clenched at the visual of stripping off my panties and climbing on top of him. With his arms tucked away, muscles flexing with his restlessness, he looked tethered and completely at my mercy, like having a dangerous animal chained to the bed. I trailed my gaze lower over the dips and grooves of his carved abs to the massive erection tenting his briefs. And God, my palms itched to touch him. I sucked my bottom lip between my teeth, imagining my hands on him, the ridges and veins slipping beneath my fingertips. Don't do it, my head urged. So badly, though, I wanted to pull it out and feel the weight of his cock in my palm. A deep masculine groan vibrated out of him, the sound slipping across my skin like rough hands springing goosebumps. Before I could stop myself, I slowly reached out, ghosting my fingers over one of his thighs, those powerful beasts he toned with his daily runs. Long cords of muscle contracted beneath my fingertips as I dragged them upward. On a sharp breath, his hand shot out and grabbed my wrist. I turned to see his eyes open but heavy with sleep, as he stared down at me, furious.
What are you doing?
He growled.
Get your hand off of me.
Humiliation seared through me as I retracted my hand and scrambled for an explanation. I hadn't expected him to be angry. Surprised, perhaps, but not this. You said my name. You asked me to touch you. I'm sorry. I turned over, wishing I could crawl into a hole and lock myself away. The mortification springing tears to my eyes. I'm so stupid. Minutes passed in silence, and I eyed the door, wondering if I should leave and go back to my own dorm. The decision took hold, and I sat up in bed, not daring so much as a glance at him. As I reached down for my skirt, I felt a grip of my arm.
What do you think you're doing?
Going back to my dorm. I shouldn't have put my hands on you like that.
You're not going anywhere at this hour.
Wrenching my arm free was futile against the unrelenting grip he had on me. Please, this is embarrassing enough. A hard yank sent me crashing back to my pillow and I stared up at him, frowning at the abrupt movement. The predatory gaze devoured me like a hearty meal, the sharp anger from before devolving into an untamable carnality.
Do you have any idea how fucking hard it is to lie next to you? It's killing me.
Another hungry sweep of his eyes and he licked his lips.
I've been numb for as long as I can remember. You're the first thing I've felt in years, Lilia. All I want to do is touch you.
Then touch me. I turned to face him and reached out for his hand. Brows pinched to a frown, he gripped my wrist instead, his jaw clenching.
Don't,
he warned. Touch me.
No.
I twisted my arm to get loose, a heated mix of embarrassment and frustration blazing across my face. Then let me go. His grip tightened, his nostrils flaring in obvious anger, and when I brought my other arm up to push him off, he swiped up that wrist too. Something inside of me snapped, and I wriggled to break free from his grip. The strength in his arms proved true, as he held me with little effort or exertion while I thrashed for freedom. He gathered my arms together and with ease turned me to my side and dragged me against him, putting my back to his chest. Heaving breaths sawed out of me as I lay trapped in his inflexible embrace with no chance for escape, not a word spoken between us. As I stared at the bookcase across from me, I took in the rigidity of his arms around me, the way they held me firmly, tenaciously, and yet how at home I felt in his embrace. Safe. Another minute passed and his grip slackened. His forehead rested against my shoulder, palm skimming down the length of my arm to my hip. The slow, aching grind of his erection pressed against my ass left me fighting to breathe as I squirmed against him in a silent battle of wills.
This thing with you, it's fucking me up.
His voice shook as badly as the muscles in his arms that held me against him like a steel cage.
You're a sickness inside of me that begs never to be cured, infecting me with this unshakable craving for things I shouldn't want.
Then let me go.
No,
he said in an uncompromising tone, his fingers digging into my hips.
I can't.
Without a word, I slipped my shorts off, leaving my panties as the only barrier. As toxic as it was, I relished this game between us, the push and pull, the stolen touches and delicious tension. I knew it was wrong. I knew what hell this would bring. If anyone found out about us, I'd lose everything and would be forced to return to Connor and Angelo and the life I fucking hated. I'd be forced to abandon however close I'd gotten to finding out the truth about my mother. B would undoubtedly get kicked out of her school, and God, if she ever caught wind of why, she'd hate me. I'd hate me, too. And the consequences didn't end there. Bramwell could lose his position, and what then? Would the project go on? Would they continue to fund it or move on and leave millions to suffer the loss of his discovery? I knew all these things, but I couldn't help myself. I both hated and craved the addicting way he'd hooked himself into my veins and fed me with this unbridled and reckless desire. It went against everything I was, everything I believed, and yet it was everything. For so long, I'd been forced to bury that side of me. I'd grown up too fast and had left the wild and carefree teenager in the dust. When my friends had talked about boys and going on dates and getting drunk in basement parties, I was stressing over bills and how I'd take care of my sister, while clinging to a distant dream of getting out of that apartment. On the outside was a smart and responsible young woman with a shit ton of potential, and yet I yearned for the stupid girl who just needed a break. A moment of recklessness. Bramwell was my moment. Even if he wanted nothing to do with me tomorrow and would cast me aside like leftovers, he was my greatest risk and I needed to grab it by the balls and not let go. Literally. I slid my hand between my ass and his bulge, feeling his hard length behind his briefs, and his body turned rigid, hard like iron against me. Hand covering mine, he silently halted my movements, and I waited to see if he'd throw my hand away and tell me to stop. Instead, he squeezed his hand over mine and shifted his hips, feeding his cock into my eager palm. A shuddering breath hit the back of my neck, and his teeth grazed my shoulder. Victory surged on the wings of butterflies in my stomach. I bit my lip, smiling to myself as he relented some of his control. With careful strokes, I massaged the erection sticking up out of his briefs. Eyes widened as I took in the length and girth of the man, the way it strained behind that measly layer of fabric like it'd tear through any moment. Jesus, no wonder Gilchrist pined after him like a lost puppy.
We need to stop. Fuck, I can't do this.
His voice held a raspy tension, and I would have released him right then, but his hand betrayed his words when it slid up the hem of my shirt. A slow, taunting trail of his fingertips to the lace bra beneath, which he peeled back, springing my breast free.
Tell me to stop, Lilia. I'm fucking begging you.
Opposite to what he asked, I wedged my hand down inside his briefs and stroked the stiff flesh that clearly begged for attention. He hissed and rolled his hips in the motion of thrusting into my palm.
You're going to destroy me, and I won't stop you. It feels too fucking good to stop.
On a growl of frustration, he squeezed my breast as if punishing me for his lack of control, and I let out a moan, but the dominating grip of his palm felt so fucking good. The heavy ache melted away with his kneading and stroking, and I arched into him with the relief of his touch. His rough grip lightened as he ran the pad of his thumb over my nipple.
Every inch of you is something new to explore. A new texture. A new curve. Sensations I've been robbed of for so long.
In tiny circles, he painted an inescapable pleasure that left me in a dizzy lust.
God damn it. Your skin is like fine silk. I could spend hours touching you. I never tire of it.
With a nudge, he urged me onto my back and lifted my shirt up to my neck. He peeled back the cup of my bra and bent forward, sucking my nipple into his mouth. I gripped the frame of the bed above me and slid my bottom lip between my teeth, biting down as the delicious pull of his mouth tugged the ache that throbbed at my pussy. My fingers curled tighter on the metal bar above me, knees pressed together while the soft trickle of my arousal spilled into my cotton panties. I squirmed as he moved to the other breast, sucking that nipple to a hardened peak and flicking his tongue against the sensitive tip. Seeming to notice the torment, he skated his hand lower, his palm flat against me until he reached the apex of my thighs and rubbed his finger over my panties.
Of course you're wet.
His voice held a sharp bite of anger at the discovery. My body slid closer to his chest, one of his arms wedged beneath me and across my chest, holding me to him as if I'd try to get away. Like I would have attempted such a thing right then. Determined fingers breached the hem of my panties, and I bowed in exquisite agony as he painted gentle lines over my undoubtedly drenched seam.
Fuck me.
That deep baritone voice in my ear innervated this frantic need for him that pulled like a taut string ready to snap. Whether intentional or a mindless act, his other hand gripped my throat as he ran his finger up and down my slippery seam, gathering the slick dew he'd worked up. In my periphery, he brought his hand to his mouth, and a deep, throaty sound of satisfaction rolled through his chest.
Why do you have to taste like a sweet forbidden fruit? God damn, you're killing me, Lilia. I can't do this. I can't.
Don't stop, please. I'm begging you. So many nights I've... I cut myself off, embarrassed to admit that I'd fucked my own pillow to thoughts of him.
You've what? Tell me everything. Every detail. I want to hear what you do when you're alone.
It seemed to keep him interested, and though I risked the most humiliating confession of my life, I was too intoxicated to care right then. I dream that you come into my room and... He flicked a wet finger over my clit and I arched into him on a moan.
And what?
And you climb into bed beside me just like this.
Are you sleeping?
Yes. Teeth grazed the shell of my ear. His shaky breaths telling me the story turned him on, so I kept going. You shove your hand down my panties. Just like this. He spread me wider and pressed into my clit, giving just enough pressure that I clenched my teeth as he rolled the sensitive flesh between his fingers.
Do I fuck you with my fingers?
Yes, definitely. At that, he plunged two fingers up inside of me, his thumb still pressed to my clit. The man knew exactly what he was doing, as if he'd earned a goddamn degree in fingering. Wet sounds reverberated in my head as I relayed the fantasy. Yeah. Choke me a little. Not hard, just enough to make me gasp.
Well, I like this dream.
His palm pressed into my throat, the pressure parting my lips, and fucking hell, it was perfect. The lack of breath, the disheveled state of my clothes that made me look ravished, the feel of his fingers plunging and stroking while he held me captive against him. Every detail culminated into the flawless visual inside my head.
Tell me, little moth, have I ever eaten your pussy in these fantasies?
Not yet, but mostly because I hesitated to admit the truth that played on the tip of my tongue. It was stupid. Every other girl I knew had had a boy go down on them before. I'd had fingers prod and poke me there, but never a mouth. I've never done that before. To my utter disappointment, he stilled against me.
Tell me you're joking.
My cheeks heated with humiliation.
Are you a virgin?
The question brought to mind the incredibly awkward and dissatisfying attempts at 15 years old with Ghost Boy. No, technically I wasn't a virgin, but that didn't mean I'd actually experienced sex. At least not the kind of sex Professor Bramwell undoubtedly excelled at. The rest of my sexual experiences had boiled down to blowjobs and hand-jerking, two skills I'd honed during my tutoring sessions. I'm not a virgin. But I haven't done much at all in the last couple of years. I just never had time for boys, so I never really dated after my mother died.
Fuck.
He released me and rolled onto his back, rubbing a hand down his face. The humiliation squeezed me harder, and I settled on my back beside him. I want to do this with you.
No. I'm not going to be your first anything.
Right. So it's better for me to experience that with some asshole in the back of his car who'll ghost me the next day? He made a gruff sound of disapproval, and I turned to see his jaw grinding, as if I'd pissed him off. Please, Devrick, I want this. Flares of mortification arrived in rapid fire when I realized I'd just called him by his first name. Clearly, he'd caught it, too, as he slowly lowered his hands and turned toward me.
Say that again?
I want the...
Not that.
Please. Devrick. Another agonizing moment of contemplation followed, and I was certain he was about to roll away again. Instead, he pushed up from the bed and rolled over top of me. A carnal darkness shadowed his eyes as he stared down at me, stroking his long, hard cock. He tore away the sheet, exposing my lifted shirt and soaked panties.
I'm not fucking you tonight. But I am going to dine on this obnoxiously wet pussy. And I'm going to enjoy every moment of knowing I'm the only man who's ever tasted you.
His eyes locked on mine. He slid my panties down my thighs slowly until they reached my knees. And only then did he break contact.
And because I'm a selfish prick who has to live with the fact that I cannot have you to myself, I'm going to ruin you. So that any boy who comes after me will leave you deeply unsatisfied, and you'll be left fucking your own fingers, desperate to remember the time you had your professor's face between your legs.
The crass edge to his words titillated my nerves and sent a tremble of excitement fluttering in my core. His tongue swept across his lips as he slid the panties over my ankles and tossed them away.
"Panties are for the modest,"
he said with an air of disgust, as if I was the one who'd brought him to this place of desperation, as if I alone shouldered the blame for what was to come of this night. Once that little layer of cotton was out of his way, he pushed my knees apart, and the disgust carved in his furrowed brow withered to a shimmer of gratitude as he stared down at me. Chest rising and falling, he kept his gaze fixed between my thighs and bit his knuckle, falling back onto his heels.
"Damn you, Lilia. God damn you."
He reverently ran his hand down my inner thigh and dropped forward, propping himself up on muscled arms. He kissed the inside of my thigh, the softness of his lips sending a tickle to my stomach. Lower and lower, he trailed his kisses, and when he finally reached the apex of my thighs, I held my breath, my heart so wound up, it was a wonder he couldn't hear it rattle across my ribs. He rested his nose against my folds and I twitched on contact. A deep inhale sent my pulse rate soaring. He was smelling me. There. Oh, God. All I wanted to do was slam my legs closed right then, but his head would have gotten crushed. A whimper slipped past my lips, and I reached down to grab the top of his head. I wanted to tell him to stop, but the humiliation exhilarated me. What the hell was wrong with me? It was so primal, hot. So hot I felt the shameless urge to grind against the ticklish stubble of his face. He took hold of my wrist and pried it from where I'd clutched the top of his skull. "Deverick, I'm nervous."
"You should be. Your professor is about to eat your pussy, Lilia. There's a whole host of reasons why that's fucked up, but I'm too far gone to stop myself. At this point, there is nothing I want more than to feel that obscenely pink clit of yours against my tongue. And we will never do this again after tonight. Do you understand? This cannot happen again."
"I understand," I rasped. Wearing that same stern, unyielding expression that he wore in lecture when he refused to entertain further questions, he lowered his head. Legs spread wide, I turned away, closing my eyes. In the silence of my mind, I prayed that I smelled okay, that I hadn't missed a spot when I'd shaved earlier that morning. Oh, God, what was taking so long? I felt completely open and on display. The anticipation curled in my belly, and when he finally made contact, every nerve ending flared inside of me. My muscles violently twitched, and I dug my fingers into the bedsheets. It occurred to me how much I'd ached for the man, as I bit down hard on my lip and pressed the crown of my head into the pillow, desperate, needy, hungry. At a long, delirious drag of his tongue, I arched upward, my fingers clawing the sheets while the shock of his invasion seared my insides. Prickles of stubble grazed my thighs, his warm, wet tongue dancing against my clit, while his fingers held me open for his assault. I wanted to bite, scratch, scream, but instead I dragged the pillow over my face, pressed it there, and focused on every sensation he'd commandeered. The sounds he made in his throat, the way his fingers plunged in and out of me, working in tandem with that relentless mouth. It was a level of mastery I couldn't even fully appreciate, because I'd never had someone so boldly dive between my legs before. In my limited experience, boys took. They took without much thought, and they rarely ever reciprocated. Ramwell was right. He'd ruined me. Destroyed me from the inside out, and there wasn't a chance in hell that I'd ever feel something so raw and thrilling and forbidden again. I threw the pillow to the side and dared to lift my head, watching him devour me like a death row meal. The slurping sounds and moans and growls he made were lewd and filthy, and spoke of a man who fervently enjoyed the task. He lifted his head for a moment, his ordinarily stern eyes heavy with intoxication, while the shine of my arousal glistened across his face in a way that reminded me of an animal feasting on prey. When he dove back in, I felt him latch on to the sensitive bud, sucking on the bit of flesh with such intensity my hips jerked toward his face. Strong hands held me down as his mouth ravaged my clit with unfaltering determination. A shocked breath missled past my lips, and I arched back, rolling my head against the mattress, my hands mindlessly fisting the sheets, desperate to claw into something. I'd learned how to stimulate my clit on my own, but it had never felt like this. An intense and delicious pull that had my belly curling, my thighs shaking. A tearless sob broke in my throat as the tension wound tighter and tighter. More powerful than when I'd masturbated with my pillow or caressed myself. The pressure throbbed and pulsed like a gluttonous beast fattening itself on my pleasure. I was about to come. Oh, God, I'd never come with anyone before. I'd only ever done it alone, and it had only ever lasted a second or two. My breaths hastened, my muscles trembled and turned rigid, so tight. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I ground my hips into his face, my professor's face. The very thought of that had such a filthy, immoral ring to it, but I'd worry about the utter depravity of it later. Right then, I was too close to stop. So close. He lifted his face from between my legs, holding my knees apart as he stared down at me. What are you doing? I sounded drunk, intoxicated. I ground my ass into the bed, desperate for his lips and fingers and that fiendish sucking that had turned my world on its ass only seconds ago. Please, I need...
You need what?
A hard, stinging smack smarted my pussy, and I twitched, moaning at the sensitivity of my flesh, a delicious mix of pleasure and pain. I need to come. I need to come so bad. I circled my hips as the desperation vibrated in my muscles, intensifying the ache. I thirsted for his touch like a withering flower. The need he'd stirred with his fingers coursed through my body with a punishing violence.
You are a salacious little nymph, aren't you? Turn over.
His command was terse and pitiless, and as I turned over onto my belly, he roughly yanked me up onto my knees.
Ass in the air, hands flat on the mattress.
Frustrated and painfully aroused, I did exactly that, letting him position my knees apart however he wanted. I needed this. I needed him to finish me or I'd die of agony. Was that even possible? Could someone die of the desperate need to come? His big palms cuffed my ankles to the mattress, holding me spread open. I waited for him to do something, to stick his fingers in me again or drag his tongue over my throbbing clit. My thighs trembled with a ravenous gluttony I'd never felt before. Instead, he bent over me, those muscled arms caging me beneath him.
I'll bet your pussy is aching to be filled right now.
It wasn't a question. The sadist knew what he was doing. The tension in the air bore teeth and claws whose jagged edges raised my skin. I'd never wanted to be destroyed so much in my life. Yes, please, it hurts. Oh, God, it hurts. A sharp pain struck my skull as he yanked my hair, lifting my head from the bed.
Did you think I'd feel sorry for you? That I'd be gentle? I feel this torture every fucking time you walk into a room.
He pressed a thumb into the crease of my ass, and I sucked in a breath as he threatened to breach the tight ring of muscle there, pushing and massaging.
So, I don't feel sorry for you, Lilia. In fact, it warms my dirty bastard soul to know you ache this way.
Holding his thumb there, he alternated between licking my pussy and fingering it. Each time I neared climax, he stopped, dragging me back from the edge, and I was left soaking wet and twice as needy. He toyed with me like that for what felt like an eternity, never seeming to tire of this vicious little game. I, on the other hand, clawed and scratched and pleaded, damn near sobbing. Once again, lying on my back, I wrapped my arms around my knees, holding myself open for him when he commanded I do so. Wearing the same cold expression as before, he stared down at me while stroking his cock, teasing me with it. The level of control the man demonstrated only heightened my arousal as he stared down at me with those mercurial eyes that seared my insides.
I cannot properly express how much I'd love to shove my cock inside you right now.
The mere suggestion had his tip shining with more pre-cum. I wanted to tell him to do it, but the size of it scared me. Would probably split me in two. Instead, I licked my lips, wishing I could taste the fluid gathered at the head of it.
Are you ready to come, Lilia?
Please don't tease me. I can't stand it anymore.
Don't tease you. The way you tease me every goddamn day, with these short skirts and those pouty, fuckable lips. That obnoxious lipstick that I imagine smeared all over my cock.
You don't exactly dress like a priest yourself. You don't think every girl in class dreams of fucking you?
Well, I don't give a damn about every other girl. There's only one who crosses my mind a fuck ton more than she should. So I'm going to finish you, Lilia. I'm going to give you the release you've been craving, and I won't touch you again. But this pussy belongs to me. You let any other undeserving prick near it, and I will cut out his tongue and send it to you in a specimen jar.
I must have been sick, considering the rush of arousal that leaked down my ass as I took in his dirty and psychotic words. As well-mannered and refined as he was, the man had a darkness about him that was absolute catnip to my libido. He stirred an ungodly ache that sang to the deep-seated fantasies I kept in a box, tied with black ribbons somewhere inside my head. Red and swollen from his relentless sucking, I imagined myself sitting in lecture the next day, watching him in his button-down shirt and dark jeans, listening to that voice that made every girl in class wish he taught erotic literature. I tried to imagine the terrifying feeling of knowing I'd only had him once, but it had been enough to mess me up for the rest of my life. I couldn't stay in those visuals, though, because every speck of thought came spiraling back into the present when he put his mouth on me again. Gentler that time, as if he knew it was coming to an end and wanted to savor the last bits. With feather-light tickles, he teased and taunted me toward the pinnacle again. My body tensed and loosened, hesitant to let him lead me up such a treacherous path, untrusting of his tricks, but he was persistent. He didn't move, didn't jar my senses with some maddening switch of position. He tickled my appetite with the same consistent flick of his tongue until my muscles trembled again. Breaths panted out of me and my hands balled into tight fists. Please, 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 my head begged. The storm inside my belly thrashed and twisted and rolled like a tide gathering momentum. Faster, faster. That euphoric crest loomed over me like a wicked threat, one that would pull me under and drown me in a black squall of ecstasy. I wanted to spit the same venom back in his face for refusing to let me come by making him wait for the finale he so clearly sought from me with that relentless tongue of his. I couldn't, though. God damn it, the man had my muscles cramped and shaking with desperation. He fluttered his tongue one more time, and the wave crashed down mercilessly, exploding at the back of my head. Body bowed, I screamed his name, writhing under his unforgiving mouth as he shook his face and gave one long, agonizing suck of my clit to finish me off. He released me on a pop, and I rode out the subsequent shocks that rocked through me like tiny bolts of electricity. It was everything. Everything I ever dreamed it would be with him, and when he moaned, lapping up the fluids spilling out of me, I lifted my head from the bed to commit the scene to memory. Every sensation, every scent, every sound. I wanted him in my blood, pulsing through me, heating my skin on the nights when I'd be alone in my bed thinking of this moment, right here, right now, forever. He pushed up from my thighs, staring down at me with a look of awe that made my belly flutter again. One that begged me to look away, to avoid seeing the prideful victory creep across his face like it had with every other boy who'd felt he somehow conquered me after hooking up.
I knew you'd be fucking beautiful when you came, but I didn't imagine you'd look like this.
Like what? He didn't answer. But the carnal and possessive glint in his eyes as his fingers dug into my skin said everything. Mine. With a firm grip of my ankles, he slid me down to the edge of the bed and fell forward, catching himself on outstretched arms. One hand stroked down my hair as his lips latched to my neck.
You can shower first, if you'd like.
he said against my throat. It seemed almost silly, showering separately after what he'd done to me, but I didn't bother to offer suggestions. You go first. I didn't want to wash him off me yet. A part of me hoped his essence would seep beneath my skin, that maybe he'd feel the same shiver of need as I did if I kept a part of him inside of me. What a sickening thought. It wasn't until he pushed away that I caught a glimpse of what must have been a painfully stiff erection sticking up from his boxer briefs. How badly I wanted to run my tongue over it. The mere suggestion watered my mouth, and I could practically feel my gag reflexes kicking in. When he turned away from me, my focus switched to his broad, muscled back that tapered down into the most deliciously toned ass I'd ever seen, and long, powerful thighs that I imagined could hold a woman in place with little effort. He disappeared through a door to the right of the fireplace, closing it behind him. Light radiated through the crack at the bottom, followed by the sound of a shower flicking on. I turned toward the computer on his desk, the cabinets undoubtedly brimming with old files. The younger me, the girl who'd grown up on the unforgiving streets where etiquette and decorum were nothing but the fancy words of the rich, begged to unscrupulously plow through his personal space without care. The other part of me loathed the thought of betraying his trust. I pushed up from the bed, fixing my bra and shirt and swiped up my tangled panties, the crotch of them still damp as I slid them up my thighs. When I stepped in the direction of his desk, I paused, though. Would a man like him leave information like that lying around for anyone? He probably had a password on his computer. His desk was undoubtedly locked, along with any file cabinets. Was I foolish enough to think he'd make it easy to drag out what must have been a humiliating piece of his past? The experiments that had marred his family name. I brushed my finger over the mouse pad of his laptop, where I was prompted to enter a password. A tug of the drawers to the right of me confirmed that he'd locked them. It would be futile to attempt rummaging through his things, especially when I already had an advantage that, to my knowledge, most didn't. How many could have said they'd gotten that close to the man? I lifted my gaze toward the bathroom door, where the light flickered beneath, and licked my lips before I darted from my bag and rummaged for the tube of lipstick. I applied it thickly across my lips, and without much prompting, padded toward the door, carefully turning the knob to find it wasn't locked. A light push cracked it open, and the monotonous sound of running water sharpened as I peeked into the steamy space. It was obvious, based on the simple but modern decor of white tiles, white porcelain pedestal sink, and toilet, that it had been added on at some point, as it didn't fit the aged look of its surroundings. The shower was a simple box with glass doors, thick with steam, through which I could just make out his shape, bent slightly over himself, his arm moving quickly, the merciless strokes of his fist echoing through the stall. Turned slightly away, he didn't seem to notice me watching him, and my tongue prickled as I imagined that long cock sliding against his palm. I yanked the hem of my shirt over my head and snapped off my bra, then slid out of my panties. With careful steps, I tiptoed closer, and when I slid the glass door aside, I was greeted by the full scope of his erection. Jesus. The man was huge. From where I stood, I could see the entirety of his shoulder and bicep that had been ruined by the acid attack. The raw shine of newly healed skin. The scars. So many of them scattered over his flesh. The sight of him had my fingers itching with the urge to touch them, to feel the cruelty that had been inflicted on him. I'd noticed it before, but beneath the harsh lights it was almost glaring. He twisted around and his gaze immediately skated down my body, the appreciation in his expression tickling my confidence. And when it trailed back upward, he seemed riveted on my lips. I stepped into the stall and slid the door closed, shutting me in with him. Eyes locked on his, I lowered to my knees, squinting against the errant drops of water that sprayed in my face. Cock still in hand, he watched me warily, his chest rising and falling. I didn't bother to break my stare as I leaned forward and licked the weeping tip, watching his eyes screw shut.
Lilia.
The strain in his voice told me a battle waged in his head.
I can't do this.